Most people think peace and joy are the goals of the spiritual life. This is a fallacy. Peace and joy are the basic requirements for a life of well-being. If you want to enjoy your dinner tonight, you must be peaceful and happy. If you want to enjoy your family, the work that you do, and the world that you live in, you must be peaceful and happy. Peace and joy are not things you attain at the end of your life. They are the basis of your life. If you consider peace to be the ultimate goal, you will only rest in peace. The word spirituality is one of the most corrupted words on the planet. Don't walk the spiritual path for peace. It is because most people are so deprived of peace that they consider it to be the ultimate aspiration. When I was in Tel Aviv some years ago, I was told that shalom was the highest form of greeting possible. I asked why. Because it means peace, I was told. I said, why would peace be the highest aspiration unless you're in the Middle East? If you were on a desert island without food for 10 days and suddenly God appeared before you, would you want Him to appear as a shining light or in the form of bread? In India, certain communities worship food as God because they have been deprived of food for a long time. In California, love is God. Whatever you feel deprived of looks like the highest aspiration. The thing to remember is, none of these will settle you in any enduring way. Human life is longing for unlimited expansion, and that is the only thing that will settle you for good. The spiritual quest is not a cultivated choice. It is not an induced quest. It is a natural longing. But unless you handle it consciously, it will not yield. When being peaceful, blissful, and joyous are not efforts anymore, you naturally start seeking, want to know the nature of life. Mysticism on this planet evolved only in those places where people learned the technology of being ecstatic by their own nature. This is because only when you are blissful will you be in the highest state of receptivity, truly willing to explore all aspects of life. Otherwise, you would not dare, because if keeping yourself pleasant is a big challenge, you cannot take on other challenges. Once it happened, an 85-year-old man went fishing in Louisiana. When he was just about to call it a day, he caught a frog. He was about to release it into the marsh again, when the frog spoke, "Just kiss me passionately," it said, "and I will turn into a beautiful young woman." The old man inspected the frog for a long time. The frog puckered up its lips in anticipation. Then the old man put the frog into his fish bag. The frog screamed, "Didn't you hear me? Just one kiss and I will turn into a really beautiful young woman." The old man said, "At my age, there is not much I can do with a beautiful young woman. If kissing you could turn me into a handsome young prince, that would be different. But for now, a talking frog, believe me, I can smell money." Choices that you make out of inability are not life solutions. An inability to be joyful by your own nature can make the simplest issues in life seem like highly complex problems. Right now, being peaceful and joyful is made out to be the most significant problem in human existence. In pursuit of human happiness, we are ripping the planet apart. The reason the simple things like being peaceful, joyful and loving have become ultimate aspirations is that people are living without paying any attention to the life process. When most people say life, they mean the accessories of life, their work, their family, their relationships, the homes they live in, the cars they drive, the clothes they wear, or the gods they pray to. The one thing that they miss is life, the life process itself, the essential life that is you. The moment you make this fundamental mistake of identifying something that is not you as yourself, life becomes an unnecessary struggle. The foundations of peace and bliss are not about attending to the external realities of your life, but in accessing and organizing the inner nature of your being. You are capable of experiencing only that which is within the boundaries of your sensation, but if you throw the boundary of your sensation out in an expanded form, you can sit here and experience everyone and everything as yourself. You can stretch it further, and you can experience the very cosmos as you experience your own body. When this sense of inclusiveness happened to me, I understood that being loving and compassionate is not an idea. To live in empathy is not some esoteric principle. This is the way a human being is made. If you do not identify with anything you have accumulated over a period of time, including your body and mind, you will be able to experience this. Enlightenment is not an attainment or an achievement. It is a homecoming. Your senses give you the impression that you are experiencing the outside, but you have never experienced the outside. When you realize that all you experience is within, that absolute homecoming is enlightenment. My life is just devoted to evolving methods so that people can experience this inclusiveness. If we truly have to create solutions that are relevant for all, an experience of absolute inclusiveness has to happen to humanity, and it is possible. The reason why everyone is not naturally enlightened is simply this. People have categorized the world into good and bad, God and devil, high and low, sacred and filthy, pure and impure, heaven and hell. These are parallel lines that will never meet. Once you have fractured this existence within yourself, there is no way to reach a state of enduring well-being and freedom. You have been told to love your enemy. If you first label someone your enemy and then try to love him or her, it is going to be torturous. Once you have fragmented creation like this, there is no way to arrive at a state of absolute inclusiveness. The problem is that human beings have lost a fundamental distinction between inward and outward, between their way of being and the way they transact with the external world. Transactions are different according to the nature of situation or relationship. However remote or intimate, transactions are always governed by laws or norms. But when it comes to our inner nature, there is only one governing principle, borderless unity. Our physical and social worlds are governed by boundaries. Our inner world needs none. To attain the ecstasy of borderless unity, which is our natural state, all you need to do is live by the guideline that all human experience is generated from within, either with the support of external stimuli or without. That is all. If you establish this within yourself absolutely, the consequences of your transactions will no longer be burdensome. What do we mean by this? People often ask me, maybe this is possible for you as a yogi, but how can we who live in the real world make our interactions free of friction? I remind them that I don't live in a cave. I also lead people. I do work around the world with millions of volunteers. This means they usually aren't trained for the job they're doing, and you can't fire them. Do you know how difficult it is to manage such a situation? By implication, my life should be the most burdensome, but you won't ever see me distressed because my way of being is not in any way enslaved to what's happening outside. This is not an otherworldly achievement. It is possible for everyone to live this way. If you still believe that someone up there is going to rescue you and solve all your problems, just remember that you are living on a round planet and one that is spinning. So whenever you look up, you are obviously looking in the wrong direction. In this vast, ever-expanding cosmos, what's up and what's down, you have no clue. Nowhere in the cosmos is it marked this side up. The only distinction you do know right now is within and without, although for the yogi, even this distinction has vanished. Thousands of years ago, a yogi appeared in the upper regions of Himalayas. He came to be known as Adi Yogi, the first yogi, and it was he who bequeathed the science of yoga to seven disciples, who later carried it around the world. What he imparted to these disciples was an unimaginably profound system of self-exploration and transformation, based on the radical premise that it is possible for a human being to evolve consciously, unlike biological evolution, which happens without our conscious participation. Spiritual evolution can happen consciously. All it takes, Adi Yogi told us, is willingness. If we were to distill the essence of his wisdom in a few lines, it would be just this: up and down, good and bad, sacred and profane, these are all assumed. But inward and outward, this is the one context we are sure of, and one context we can work with. This is Adi Yogi's most significant contribution to humankind, and it is a profound and enduring one. The only way out is in. Once it happened, someone came looking for the Isha Yoga Center in southern India. They came to a nearby village and asked a local boy, "How far is the Isha Yoga Center?" The boy scratched his head and said, 24,996 miles. The man was aghast. "What, that far?" The boy said, "Yes, the way you're going, but if you turn around, it's just 4 miles. If you go outward, it is an endless journey. If you turn inward, it is just one moment. In that one moment, everything changes. In that one moment, you are not in pursuit of joy anymore. Instead, your life becomes an expression of your joyfulness."